Ah, yes, welcome indeed to The Age Stage. Great to have you company. This is RPPFM broadcasting across the Mornington Peninsula, and it's wonderful to have you there. 98.7 and 98.3, The Age Stage, a program in which we look at the issues and matters affecting older Australians, made possible, of course, by the Village Baxter, by the Village Glen, and Encore Living for that rural alternative. I'm Brendan Telfer, and joining me in the studio today to co-host the big show is Paula Dunn. Paula, it's been some time since you've been here, the first time we've worked together.
Yes, it is, Brendan.
So it is a delight to welcome you to The Age Stage.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
Again, we've got a big program today. We have Stuart and Katie in the studio, but a little bit later we're going to be talking about laughter.
We are.
A very important piece of research has been done at La Trobe University, and it basically indicates for those of us over 60, and I include myself immediately in that category, laughter is very good for us.
It is very good for us.
But you've known about this for ages, haven't
you? Yes, it's not new.
Why didn't La Trobe talk to you, Paul?
I don't know why they didn't. I didn't get the call. But it's evidence that's been around for many, many years.
Fantastic.
That laughter helps us release these feel-good chemicals.
Yes.
Called endorphins.
Yes.
And serotonin as well. Yep. And so that helps us feel better.
It's fantastic. Yeah. Well, there's some interesting evidence. We're going to be speaking to La Trobe University a little bit later on today in the big show. But first, our guests. And we have Katie Simons, who's back. Katie, welcome.
Thanks again for having me.
Representing today, Katie.
Our Peninsula FlexiCare, based down at the Village Glen.
Indeed. And we also have Stuart here today as well. Stuart, welcome.
Thank you, Brendan.
And
Paula, what's happening to Miss Vicky?
Miss Vicky, she has a series of other priorities in her life.
Well, you're saying we're not a priority.
Stuart, we love you and we prioritise you. We make a beeline for you every day. But Miss Vicky has she has a growing family. She has a husband who's overseas a lot, and she has responsibilities for her own business as well. And basically, we've given her a tick to take off for a little while. But she loves us all madly. And who knows, maybe she's going to come back and join us again very, very soon.
Could we say on behalf of the team that have been here for the last 12 months, we wish her every success, every happiness, and we hope. But, you know, life is really good for her going forward.
Thank you very much.
A lovely person. And
she is a lovely person.
She's
so
super.
She'll be missed.
She will.
Paula.
Is
welcome.
Here.
What can I say?
Vicky's gone, Paula. you're in. And Katie.
Yes.
And what's happened to Peter, for heaven's sake?
Yes.
Peter's up in Canberra at the moment, Stuart.
So yes. What is Peter doing? Are we allowed to ask, or is it all very hush-hush, Katie?
Stuart can probably elaborate on that, because Stuart's only just got back from Canberra himself.
Look, that's a place to be. It's winter. You go to Canberra.
Oh, don't you? Yes.
It is just the place to be. If you recall, some weeks ago, we indicated that we were trying to meet with the ministers about the future, the media reporting of retirement villages arising from the adverse media coverage that they'd been receiving. So yesterday we met with Minister McCormack, who's Minister for Small Business, and Ken Wyatt, being the Minister for Ageing or Aged Care. And we had 15 people in the room. And together we represented over 50,000 older persons living in retirement villages, representing 40,000 units. So from Lendlease, Stocklands and a range of smaller providers such as Village Glen and ourselves. And we spent a good happy little hour in the halls of Parliament just discussing, you know, what can we do to improve the image of the industry and how does the industry actually operate and just trying to look for some fairly positive things that we can do to just put a balanced perspective from that media coverage.
And so how did you find the reaction of the ministers, can I ask, Stuart? Were they receptive to the story that you were telling?
Yeah, but both ministers seemed to have a really good grasp on the issues. Certainly Minister McCormack, being the Minister for Small Business, so he actually liaises with the Consumer Affairs or Fair Trading Ministers in each of the states. Most states have a Fair Trading, Victoria has Consumer Affairs, and they are the bodies that have state regulation over the industry. Mm-hmm. So he's abreast of it through that medium, and he's got a meeting with his state counterparts on the 31st of August to just try and advance some of the topics that we touched on yesterday.
And do you feel that there's been, or there will be some resolution, you know, coming out of this?
Well, as I said on after the media had first reported it, that it was not what one would consider a very balanced take on it. Mm. If you look at reality, and it's been some time since I was on a state-based committee for the retirement village legislation, but at that stage, Consumer Affairs would get something like 0.2% of occupants of villages would lodge a complaint. You know, complaints are generally very minimal, and so we need to keep it in perspective.
Yes.
That's not to say that the organisation in question, who is a subject of the media, is doing the right thing or is doing the wrong thing.
Mm.
But there just needs to be a balanced perspective about what's going on so that people can form their own opinion. But since then, of course, you've had a number of other people that have come out, and, you know, every day is a different headline, and people confuse it with aged care as opposed to retirement living, and and there's a general confusion within people's minds about the different focuses of different sectors, despite all the work we've tried to do over the last 12 months to point out the differences.
Here in the Age Stage.
Yes.
why we drag you and Katie in here every week, or others, hey?
And Peter's in Canberra today. Peter was there yesterday and as part of the delegation. And today one of our other peak organisations is equally meeting with Minister Wyatt at around this particular time. So hopefully that will give a different perspective from... So there's three peak organisations that seem to have coverage. One is LASA, being Leading Age Services Australia. One is ACSA, Aged and Community Service Australia. And the third one is the Property Council.
Mm.
So yesterday, as a group of providers, we represented all three of those bodies in our meeting.
But why, Stuart, would the government be so sensitive about image? Why are they getting into this area? Surely there's a service provider, or they provide the functionality in this sector. Why are they so interested in the image and what's going on in the media?
They're interested to ensure that consumers... Well, one of the things... Retirement villages have around 5% of older people, but they together, the industry is worth something like $100 billion in terms of building costs and services being provided. And they fulfil a very valuable role in the overall scheme of government housing, because some villages cater for the top end of town, other villages cater for the average person, and we're certainly, for the average person. As I've said before, any person can afford to live in the village Baxter, and there's places in between. So what you don't want to see happen is a loss of confidence in the sector that will ultimately rebound upon the government having to provide additional housing options for people.
So
the sector fulfills a very viable role in that overall housing of older people.
So is this the government on its game, do you think, in terms of being able to identify issues? I mean, is it proactive in that sense, or is this being forced on it?
No, I think from an industry perspective, we're interested to say to the government that these are the things that we believe will restore confidence in the sector if confidence is waning. It'll be a more robust system from a variety of different perspectives, and hopefully all three bodies will work together to say this is the considered plan going forward. Because the other side of a problem is that the states have carriage of the control of the legislation, so every state has different legislation. God bless us. You know, this is the benefits of having a state-based system of government. And the problem is that what works in Queensland may not work in Western Australia and doesn't work in Victoria. So if we can get some continuity of legislation would be a good thing. That way people will know around the country that, okay, this is how the industry functions.
So you're saying for a standardisation then of legislation?
It's in the modern jargon, it's harmonisation.
So this is basically the feds getting very proactive in this area and basically taking away states' rights?
No, not at all. The feds are simply... the feds have no carriage. The feds end up with the problem if a sector does have a crisis of confidence in it and people do not move into retirement villages, they end up with a residual problem that more people will go into aged care.
I was just going to say, the other issue is if people aren't downsizing into retirement villages, then the family home that then goes on the market for a new family to move in that's near the services and the schools is then not part of the stock because people are staying in their own homes and not moving into the village. Yeah. So it has these flow-on effects.
The ripple effect.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about, you know, for retirement villages to provide a good congregate living model. And the evidence is that, you know, 99% of people are very thrilled with what they've received within their organisations, no matter whether you're a for-profit provider or a not-for-profit provider. You know, Village Glen has just a fantastic record of very happy customers, as do we. I think I commented that, you know, having been there for 31 years, I've had three people who have been unhappy about their choice to move into the village. One was because they couldn't get their grand piano into our unit because it was too small.
As you do.
And I ended up going up to Queensland, presumably with the grand piano. Yeah. One was a gentleman who just never settled. He had a range of health issues. We simply gave him his money back and he bought a unit around the corner from us. Mm. So he stayed in the area. And the third one was just a person who made the wrong decision. But, you know, so we don't want unhappy people.
So what's the procedure, Stuart, if there is a complaint? How does it? What's the procedure with, or is every village different?
It depends upon the amount of power the village manager has. That some villages, if you belong to a big conglomerate, then you will generally have less power at a local level to make a decision. Mm. And that creates a bit of tension.
Yes.
Because, as we know, if you can resolve an issue then and there, you're likely to have a reasonable outcome. And Glenwood would have that approach. Mm. You know, it is the modern world. Mm. You know, and the modern world says, admit your mistakes. If we stuffed up, let's admit it.
Yep.
Move on. Mm-hmm. And, okay, how do we remedy the process thereafter?
Mm.
Similar?
Yeah. Yes, the manager has a lot of power and say in terms of addressing issues or issues that arrive down at the Village Glen. But again, we're a one village, like a very large village. But as you say, with the big conglomerates, if there's their management might all have to be escalated to a certain person. And if they've got lots of villages, that can obviously protract the time it takes to actually address a complaint.
Yeah. And that's not helpful. Yes. Because if I'm unhappy, I'm going to beat the desk and I'm going to say, well, I want help.
Yeah. You want action sort of straight away.
Probably the other thing to mention, Stuart, about retirement living is also the research shows that people that are living in retirement villages on average enter residential aged care a couple of years later than people living out in the wider community on their own.
Interesting.
So and the health benefits of people living in retirement villages is better than average than people living outside.
And we met some of your residents last week in our special, and indeed they were basically really very, very happy with their circumstances, their life and their life options as well, Katie. So, yes, it's a very interesting point that you make. Just to remind you that you're tuned up to the Age Stage across the Mornington Peninsula and beyond. On RPPFM, we have Katie, we have Paula, and we also have Stuart in the studio with us. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, more discussion about age and the age stage.
Across the Mornington Peninsula, 98.7, 98.3, RPPFM.
Indeed, do get along and support Jackie Mitchell. Will be a fantastic day right here at RPPFM. We're certainly supporting local business, as we are the Age Stage as well. This is the program that you tuned up to today. Great to have your company. Brendan Telfer in the studio today with co-host Paula Dunn. Also here is Katie from the Village Glen, and also from the Village Baxter is Stuart. We're talking about a very important sector and also discussions that Stuart has just had in Canberra with the Federal Minister for Ageing, Ken Wyatt. Yes. So just before the break, we were talking about the complaints process and also the interest in this particular area by the Australian government, Stuart. So you were saying that basically they're making good moves. It's a very important sector, as Katie was saying. And what happens here and now, they have to start defining. I mean, the demographics are pointing to the fact that we're all getting older. As it's been pointed out down here on the Mornington Peninsula, we're one of the second oldest groups, I think, in Australia, zones. And so what happens here impacts on us is going to probably have national ramification as well. And that's why the age stage is so important, is it not?
It is.
Well, 50% of us in this room are in that category. The other 50% are not.
There you go.
And you can determine yourselves who's in which 50.
We've been very discreet. But yeah, so it's a very, very interesting. And it's so interesting. And indeed, I got a feeling that the minister... It's quite interesting what's happening down here, Stuart, because the thought is that he might be visiting this part of the world in the very near future. Am I right? Or
He visited down here a couple of weeks ago and had a round table, so to speak. It was kind of an oblong
round
table.
So why, may I ask, is he coming back again?
He would, as he's visited a village Glen some few weeks ago.
Aha, so he's evening things up here. Yeah. You see, Katie, it's not all one-way traffic down the village Glen. Yeah. I'm feeling it.
But the bus does stop earlier. Right. And he will be visiting the village Baxter in 2 weeks' time. And we welcome him to have the opportunity to come down. We are holding a regional seminar. I should give a plug for the seminar.
Do it, yes.
So one of the things that we identify that our peak organisations are no longer doing is engaging well with their membership. There's not the opportunity to care and share together in a collegiate environment as the peak bodies have become more policy-focused. So down on the peninsula with Peter and with the Andrew Kerr, so a big hi to Eileen Pruden, CEO of the Andrew Kerr Centre, and the Village Baxter, we've taken it upon ourselves that we are now going to hold a regional meeting every 2 months. The next one is going to be held at the Village Baxter, and Ken White is our guest speaker.
Every 2 months, may I interrupt just for a moment? That's a lot of meetings, Stuart. Is it necessary to coordinate that much?
You learn from each other. In our industry, there's never anything new. And if you're prepared to care and share together, then we can all learn and grow. And what you've developed over the time, in our philosophy, and Village Glen have a similar philosophy in many respects, that, you know, we are not competitors. You know, we are colleagues working together. And if we can help you, we will. Mm. Remember when I went to Benalla a week or two back? That was part of caring and sharing. If someone needs help, we will go and do it. Peter will do that. Katie would do that. You know, we are not competitors. And together we can share that knowledge and share, you know, just the different tricks, traps of the industry with our colleagues throughout the area. And so why wouldn't you seek to do that?
I was going to say, in terms of the frequency of meetings too, because some of the retirement villages also offer aged care services, whether community and or residential, and there's a lot of changes going on through My Aged Care as My Aged Care has been rolled out, particularly in the community space, and there's a lot of teething issues with the My Aged Care program. So in terms of providers being able to, I guess, support each other through that, and if they've had any success in, if they've had issues and someone's been actually able to help them to fix a problem in My Aged Care, being able to share that. So besides, I guess, the issues going on in retirement living and some of the negative press, there's a lot of change and, I guess, collegial support happening between providers to see if we're all going through the same experience as My Aged Care's further rolling out.
So for our meeting with the Minister, I mean, here's an ideal opportunity for 40 local people, 50 local providers, to get down there, eyeball the minister and talk together. This is what's working, this is what's not working. And Ken White is really interested to actually hear that from people who are experiencing it on a daily basis. So he's a very genuine person. So that's our first seminar topic. Mm-hmm. And just to demonstrate that we are really committed to trying to have this collegiate network going forward. So we have supporters through legal people, insurance people, industrial relations people. So, you know, every second month, we would have a particular focus. This is what we're going to talk about this month. Is it EBA renewal time? you know, do we need to talk about what's happening and what we want to achieve through enterprise bargaining?
And do you feel, Stuart, though, that, like, it's great to have the meetings and the communication, that communication's always good, but do you feel that, or do you see outcomes from those meetings, definite outcomes? Like, it's great to meet with the minister, but then what? You know, and we all talk and we all air our grievances, but then what? Do we get an outcome? I think that's important.
I think the minister himself is really concerned about finding out what is or is not working. I know that he is actually going to work through the My Aged Care website. As a layperson who knows nothing about it, he wants to be taken through that process so we can experience firsthand how this functions through the eyes of a guy who is equally about to reach that magical age that puts him on, so the 50% becomes a 60% and 40% taking this room as an illustration. So, yeah, I think by learning those things directly, you'll find out that for a person who has no computer skills, you know, what the way in which the government are rolling this out, it just doesn't meet that particular demographic.
Yeah.
If your English is not your first language,
yes,
it's not going to work for you.
Yeah.
If you have a mild confusion, it's not going to work for you. And the all-important thing to me is that when you used to get an assessment to move into aged care, you knew at that moment in time, yes, the box has been ticked.
Yes.
Now you get an assessment that sends you into another group of people, and they will say at some point in the future whether you can have services provided, and you know nothing about that. There's no transparency.
Yes.
There's no, I mean, you just sit there in limbo.
Because, Katie, this is something that you've been banging on about a little bit as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I just bang
well,
on.
Not banging on, but you know, you're intimately involved in this process, and
yes,
you feel, I think, a need that this has to be looked at in some detail on that.
And just to follow up on your question about outcomes from the minister, he did come down to the village, Glen, and one issue we raised at the time was about consent. So it's a real roadblock. So if you refer someone to My Aged Care, you can't then ring up and see how that referral's progressing. So due to consent, they won't talk to you. So
correct,
there's been some new changes that have rolled out post that meeting that specific consents can be set up to make that process easier in the system. It's still not perfect, but at least it's moved from where it was, which was just roadblocks every time you tried to follow up where someone was that you'd actually put into the system. And so, for example, if there were physios or OTs making referrals into My Aged Care, they wouldn't be able to follow the client either, so they don't know whether they ever made it out the other end to where they were referring them to. So
horrendous.
As a duty of care for a health professional, that is a real challenge.
Yes.
So a lot of this has been fed back and there are changes rolling out, but it's obviously it's still a work in progress.
And I suppose that's where we started today's discussion about complaints.
Yes.
That the provider, I mean, the consumer will ring the provider and say, well, when's this going to happen? And the provider will say, we don't know. All we can do is follow it through the process.
So
there's no complaint process.
So the question is this the government sort of absolving itself of some responsibility and sheeting it back to you guys?
Yeah.
I mean, have you got a role here that sort of goes beyond where you expected to be, say, 10 years ago when you imagined this place that you would be at, Stuart, you and your provision?
Certainly the government have successfully shifted some of their responsibilities back onto providers.
Correct.
That's the concern.
That's just the way of the world. But, you know, providing is a transparency to the process. I think everyone would be happy, but there is no transparency. You know, you go into this, you know, it's like the Big Brother world, you know, there's this group of people sitting in limbo making decisions in their own time, and who knows what's going on. I mean, there is no transparency.
But the good news is that the minister will be down here on the Mornington Peninsula on the 23rd of August, and one of these sessions will take place, and he will be directly responsible and answerable to those that will be able to get along to the village Baxter to meet him.
And we're giving him breakfast.
As well.
So, you know,
wow. One of those legendary breakfasts.
So perhaps we could go out and record.
This is a real inducement.
From the meeting.
Why don't we do that?
Yeah, we could do that.
We're going to maybe set up a special broadcast and a special edition of the Age Stage.
Yes.
And invite the minister to join us all on air.
Exactly.
Do we think that's a good idea?
I think it's a great idea.
Sounds, you
think it's
a great idea? Like a winner.
Yes. Team, we have consensus.
We have.
We do.
See how easy that was? See, we came to a conclusion.
And we have an outcome.
We did.
As a good soup, what happens when you meet together?
Exactly.
And we'll be meeting again together in this segment on the Age Stage about the same time next week. So do join us. So thank you very much indeed, Katie. Thank you very much indeed, Stuart.
Paul, I hope it lived up to expectations for you.
It certainly did. Thank you.
So we kept you awake. That's something.
Yeah.
Or was that Katie just giving a quick ankle kick? Thanks, Brendan.
This is the Age Stage across the Mornington Peninsula and beyond. We'll take a short break and we'll be back with a whole lot more. You're listening to the Age Stage on RPPFM, coming to you from our studios here in Mornington in Australia. Great to have your company. Of course, the Age Stage is brought to you with the generous assistance of the Village Glen and Rosebud, the Village Baxter in Frankston South, and Encore Living in Carrum Downs. And RPPFM, of course, appreciates the valuable contribution of our sponsors. Well, some very interesting research came across the Age Stage desk the other day. La Trobe University research shows that regular laughter could be the secret to a healthier life for those of us over 60 years of age. And indeed, La Trobe University researchers have demonstrated that chuckles, chanting and clapping can lead to an improvement in your mood and also lower your blood pressure. Well, to find out more, a chance for us to talk to one of the primary researchers, Roz Ben-Mushier, who is a trained laughter yoga instructor, is the adjunct lecturer in the School of Public Health and Psychology at La Trobe University, and was also one of the principal researchers of this intriguing research. And Roz, welcome to the Age Stage.
Thank you so much.
Interesting research. Who and how did you go about this, and why, I guess probably the first question, why would you do this, Roz?
Well, firstly, I mean, I've been in the sort of the laughter yoga world, the laughter wellness world for many years, and I think that everybody's familiar with that saying, you know, laughter is the best medicine, but it doesn't seem to be enough to actually make people really, you know, listen and, you know, integrate, you know, more laughter into their lives. So I was very keen to actually do a research program to measure some of the specific things that laughter can actually affect. And so with my colleague, Dr. Julie Ellis, who is the lead researcher in this study, we worked together with Aged Care Services Australia Group, and we identified three different facilities where we thought we could run this, a pilot laughter yoga program for residents. So that's so obviously we had to go through university ethics, and we had to go through various other sort of things with Aged Care Services Australia Group, just to make sure that, you know, everything that we did was going to be acceptable and safe. And that's sort of how it all began.
So a couple of questions then. Did you set off with a hypothesis? Had you been provoked into this research? And where had that come from?
Sure. So I've been very interested in sort of, you know, the research about laughter. And essentially there's two different types of laughter therapy research. One is humour-based and one is non-humour-based. So there's been quite a lot of laughter therapy research conducted with the use of comedy, for example. You know, people, watching funny TV things or films and measuring the effect that that has on someone's well-being, anxiety and a range of other things. And then there's the other non-humour-based laughter therapy, which is what the laughter yoga is, which is simulated laughter exercises together with clapping. And as you say that, it's, you know, it's ho, ho, ha, ha, ha as you clap, and deep breathing. And you repeat that in a group context. Now, what a lot of the research prior to our study had shown was, yes, there had been improvements in oxygenation in terms of lymphatic system, because that's a manual system, and laughter is actually quite a physical exercise, so that helped stimulate lymphatic function. There's also was some evidence to suggest, yes, it did lower blood pressure. And then there were certainly quite a lot more studies in terms of laughter's ability in being able to reduce anxiety, depression and stress. So in terms of the demographic, we sort of chose a few markers that we thought were realistic. So we couldn't measure immune functions. It was a bit difficult because you actually have to take saliva swabs and sort of, you know, go to a lab, et cetera, et cetera. So we chose blood pressure and heart rate and positive and negative effect, and also self-perceived levels of happiness. And interestingly enough, across every single measure, we found, statistical significance, which really did match some of the broader research that has been conducted in the field. So we found that blood pressure dropped, we found less negative effect, more positive effect, and greater levels of happiness. And I think it's important to actually note that there were 20, it was quite a small study, so across the three facilities there were 28 participants, but 13 of those had dementia. And we found that even in people with dementia, they still, you know, again, that's still the self-reported and the other reported indicators were all of statistical significance.
Well, physiologically then, what is a definition of laughter and how has it evolved? Why do we humans laugh?
Well, the first thing is really it's a bonding mechanism. I mean, we laugh, we smile before we can even communicate with one another. So it's really, really integral to early, you know, the basic sort of, you know, communication, bonding, you know, with our mothers. The reality is I think that if we didn't have that laughter pre-programmed, parenting would be a hell of a lot more stressful than it is already. And there are so many ways, I mean, in terms of laughter, it's just one of the best ways to connect with people in a broader sense, you know, moving into adulthood, in terms of decreasing stress. And, you know, there are just so, you know, basically in terms of resilience, you know, once you can actually laugh about something that has been filled with trauma or pain, you're well on the way to actually healing, but also it actually helps your brain and mind remember that painful or traumatic episode in a different light, you know, with a bit more positivity infused throughout.
Well, if people are interested, they can go to the Australasian Journal of Ageing, where you published your results. Interestingly, of course, Roz, is the fact that your participants were aged between 61 and 96 years of age. As you say,
correct,
half of them did have dementia. So what impact, if any, will this have on nursing and or the protocols that are introduced in, say, residential care?
Well, it's a good question. And, I mean, I would like to say that it's going to, you know, it's going to change the way people think, but I think it's a little bit more complex than that. There was actually a second dimension to our research that has yet to be published. And essentially what we did was we ran a laughter sort of training program for lifestyle facilitators, and we actually trained over 120 staff in over 30 facilities across Victoria. So essentially that is going to be the sustainable model of moving this forward, is the way that I view it, because there's only one of me, and the way that we ran the program was as a 30-minute laughter, you know, series of laughter activities. For some facilities, that's not necessarily going to work. and it's about sort of working with lifestyle staff management, you know, how you can actually integrate laughter exercises. So whether you're going to sort of value add it to, you know, a painting class or to, you know, if there's gardening. And it's the thing about the laughter yoga is that we're adding laughter to various exercises. So whether it's a greeting laugh, you know, it's a, you know, it's sort of a or, you know, we might do more of a vocal laugh, or so it's about not leaving laughter to chance. That's the bottom line, is that if you leave laughter to chance, it's not necessarily going to happen, or it's not going to happen in a way that's going to actually improve well-being. So what I would very much like to see is, you know, various facilities really taking a serious look at laughter and work out how they can integrate laughter into their, as I say, it could be, some of the discussion was with some of the physios and some of the, you know, the exercise people who run the yoga, you know, can you add some laughter to what's already existing? Or in some facilities, it did suit them to, program once a week for 30 minutes, you know, a kookaburra laughter club, or, a laughter club, or a happy hour, whatever they wanted to phrase it. So that's sort of finding something that's going to work within each and every individual facility is really the way to go forward.
Ross Ben Moshe, who is a La Trobe University researcher, and more on this and other matters as well on the Age Stage. You're tuned up to the Age Stage across the Mornington Peninsula on 98.7 and 98.3. We're going to take a bit of a break, and when we come back, we'll be wrapping things up with Paula Dunn. Stay tuned. And welcome back to the Age Stage for the final segment of the show for this week. And the Age Stage, of course, is made possible with the generous support of the Village Baxter, the Village Glen, and Encore Living. Well, Paula, you've been involved in the area that we were speaking to La Trobe about. Laughter in this particular area, very, very interesting, and something that's been around for a long time anyway.
It has. There's been a lot of studies done about laughter. And one of the pioneers in the field of laughter is a man by the name of Norman Cousins, who had a disease many, many years ago called ankylosing spondylitis. And, you know, he was basically given the choice of dying sitting up or lying down. And so Norman decided that he didn't want either of those choices, and he took himself out of hospital. He checked himself into a hotel. He employed a nurse to go out and buy boxes and boxes of funny videos at that time. And what Norman Cousins discovered was that for every 10 to 15 minutes of solid belly laughter, it gave him 2 hours of pain-free sleep.
Wow, that was brilliant. How did he come across this theory, though?
He realised that, like, he was a politician, and he realised that they told him he had this immune problem. And so he realised that, well, if negative emotions affect the immune system, then positive emotions must affect the immune system. So he discovered this himself, that by taking vital signs and after experiencing this solid belly laughter, his immune system increased, also in conjunction with vitamin C. But it was a solid belly laughter that gave him the 2 hours of pain-free sleep. You see, the brain operates on four rhythms. Beta level is our conscious level. Alpha, theta and delta are our subconscious levels. Now, the healing level is at the alpha-theta level. And so by laughing, we release these endorphins, and it takes our brain rhythms, if we were able to hook him up to an electroencephalograph at that time when we're experiencing this, you know, deep belly laughter, we would be emitting theta alpha waves, and that's where our healing.
Well, that's absolutely brilliant. Well, yeah. The good news is that La Trobe, of course, as we heard from Roz saying, that now they're sort of quantifying this, and it's now sort of scientific, and the evidence is beginning to come in, and that's what La Trobe is all about. So,
yes.
They can now quantify it.
Exactly. And Norman Cousins wrote a book called The Anatomy of an Illness, and you can still write that book today, and it's it details the process that he went through. Quite amazing man.
Amazing.
And he actually died of old age. He died at the age, I think, about 75, 80.
And the other interesting thing as well, just speaking of Mike DeStuart and the crew as well, is that how they're now applying this sort of therapy into residential care as well. And we also heard Roz talking about that as well. So
yeah.
The implications of this research, very, very interesting. And obviously we're going to be hearing a lot more of it.
Yes, that's right. Because, you know, with our elderly population, a lot of them suffer depression. You know, they're taken out of their normal environment, they're into aged care or different lifestyles, not of their choice, and they can become, you know, quite anxious about the separation from their familiar surroundings and suffer terribly.
It's interesting. We come back to a whole cultural discussion about that. We might take it up with Stuart and the crew one of these days as well about what we do with the older people in our populations, because I know culturally there are many cultures that can't believe that we put people in residential care,
that
they should be cared for at home.
Exactly.
We've touched on this in the past in the aged stage, and I'm sure it could be a topic of much interest in the future as well.
A great topic.
How we culturally go about the treatment of the older population.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Paula, thank you very much indeed.
Pleasure.
It's been a super day. Once again, isn't it incredible just how fast this hour goes?
It is. Amazing. Amazing.
The Age Stage you've been listening to on RPPFM. We're sorry if you're just joining us that you've missed the show, but we'll be back at the same time, 11 o'clock next Thursday. And, of course, The Age Stage, proudly presented by us here at RPPFM in conjunction with our friends at The Village Baxter, The Village Glen, and Encore Living for that rural alternative. I'm Brendan Telfer. Paula Dunn, thank you.
Thank you.
See you next week.
Bye.